listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature Lee's conversation with Ann Pacheco and Diane Hartley on how they brought the fair trade campaigns to their school and congregation.
For most of us, the news about free trade agreements, tariffs, trade wars, well, these feel quite beyond our control. But in this podcast, we talk about a different paradigm of trade, and it's the kind of trade over which we have lots of control. We're talking about the trade structures known as fair trade. And just how do we exercise our power regarding trade that is fair? We can do it in elementary schools, high schools, colleges, and congregations. That's what you're about to hear about, so stay with us.
Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego, and Jubilee One Earth Economics, in a voice that's just a little growly from a chest cold that I've been having. Well, you know, Jerry, we've done several podcasts on fair trade, but none of them has been redundant. Fair trade has so many aspects, so each podcast is different. Today is no exception as we focus on the campaigns to bring fair trade to schools. Think of the schools where children of your friends and family go, the elementary level, the middle schools, the senior high schools and colleges. That means that actions on trade aren't just for economic ministers and presidents of countries. Those actions are about the structures of free trade. They are fraught with injustices and bringing favors to corporations and the wealthiest. You and I can protest those, but even better, we can implement fair trade, a completely different set of structures that make trade agreements fair and just for all involved and for the planet. Well, the fair trade movement continues to grow. When I moved to San Diego in 2002, I find this almost hard to believe, but I tried to get a fair trade coffee, tea, and chocolate display into an exhibit at an alternative holiday market about this time of year. And the person running the market hadn't heard of fair trade and was very skeptical. But she let me display. Well, in the next few years, fair trade began catching on in this area. Well, leaping ahead to where we are in the movement today, fair trade is really alive in this region, a lot because of the person we're talking to today, Ann Pacheco, and her colleague, Nancy Ryan. They educated businesses in La Mesa about fair trade, and on their second attempt before the city council approved the proposal to declare La Mesa a fair trade town. They had met all the requirements for being called such. Well, Ann and Nancy have championed fair trade tirelessly and continue to have such an impact. Well, today I interview Ann. At first I was going to interview Ann and Nancy, but then, because we're focusing on fair trade schools, Ann suggested we include Diane Hartley, principal at St. Martin of Tours Academy, a fair trade school. Well, I heartily concurred, and so we did. And that's what you'll hear today. We'll go now to that interview previously recorded.
I'm on location today, I guess you would say, at the St. Martin of Tours Academy in La Mesa. And you may hear sounds either of the Academy or El Cajon Boulevard outside the windows. We're seated here in Diane Hartney, the principal's office. And when I say we, I'm talking about Ann Pacheco and Diane Hartney and myself, and we're going to be talking about fair trade, especially fair trade in schools and in congregations. So let me just lead in. Just, you know, certainly want to welcome both of you here to the Simpler One Earth Living podcast, where we work for the common good, as you do, I know, in so many of your activities. So it was just October, Fair Trade Month, I think it's called, that I came here onto the campus for the first time on a Sunday afternoon, or I think it was Sunday afternoon, Saturday, Sunday afternoon, to a very fine Fair Trade fair. And that's what reconnected me with you, Anne. So tell us just a little bit about the fair, because it was, I think, quite successful in a number of ways.
It was very successful. We had probably over 400 people that attended the event with 19 fair trade vendors that had hundreds of craft items and products that people could choose from to buy better and really and to be more educated about the fair trade certification. We had an example would be Cafe Moto from downtown San Diego. He's a local roaster that offers fair trade coffee, and their coffee ran out. So I know we had more than 400 people because there's more than 400 cups of coffee that were gone.
You made money.
We made money. This year is our ninth year, and it was a little under $10,000 that these 19 vendors took home.
Okay, so the money actually went to the vendors, and of course then they purchase from artisans and groups that farmers that bring whatever their product is that work with a fair price. Is that a fair way to say it? Or you look like you wanted to say it a little differently.
Well, when they go back to the area where they purchase the goods, we know that the people are being paid a fair wage. We know there's no child abuses in the supply chain. We know there's no trafficking involved. We also know that a premium goes back to that community where the people can decide democratically for to vote on, like, if they need water or if they need a clinic or if they need extra machinery to do their job. So we can trace the money back to actually where the products have come from. It really is actually lifting people out of poverty.
Well, this is so exciting to me. Before we started recording, I mentioned that in 2002, when I first came to San Diego, people didn't know about fair trade. I wanted to display fair trade at an alternative holiday market, and I almost couldn't because they didn't know what it was about. So what a difference just to hear you talk and all the things that have happened since then. And you said something about a lot of people learning more about fair trade. I learned more about fair trade at that event. I went around picking up flyers and pieces of information, and one of them has to do with the distinction made between fair trade and free trade. You know, we hear a lot about trade. I mean, right now there's lots of talks about tariffs and getting out of NAFTA and working by bilateral agreements and, oh my goodness, on and on the conversation goes. Fair trade is a completely different infrastructure, and I just would like make sure that all of our listeners are clear just how distinctive this is and how we have a dramatic choice of which kind of products to acquire if we're buying imports.
Well, let me say that fair trade is different because it is rooted in transparency and justice and sustainability. It brings about a greater equity in the global economy. People are paid a living wage. They work in healthy and safe working conditions. Most of the things are organic and protect the environment. It also prevents child abuse and traces if there's any trafficking involved in it. And like I said, a premium does go back to the company or the cooperative so that people can vote democratically for things that they need to uplift their community.
Let's come into the work that's going on here at St. Martin of Tours Academy so that we bring the conceptual differences between fair trade and free trade and all down into what's going here. And Diane, I can't wait to have you tell us some about this, because here we are in the Academy and you've been key to bringing fair trade here into the work of the Academy. So you want to tell us how it started for you?
Sure. So several years ago, we started with a committee of students, parents, a few staff members, and Anne, of course, was the head of it, who really launched us in this, educating us, first of all, about what fair trade is. So since then, we have meetings every other month or so. The children are involved in many things. Our sixth grade camp fundraiser that the fifth graders do for the last 5 or 6 years have been fair trade fundraisers. So we do fair trade sales to raise funds for sixth grade camp. So it helps both. It helps our kids and it helps the people who are making those crafts. We have committed to fair trade coffee for every school and parish event. We have fair trade tea when we have those events. We have fair trade soccer balls at school. We have fair trade benches at school. And our t-shirts that we wear for our annual walkathon are fair trade t-shirts. So over the years, the teachers have given fair trade lessons in the classroom that help the children understand what fair trade is and the importance of it. One of my favorite lessons that I used to teach as a fifth grade teacher, we started off simple with about the coffee growers, because that's, you know, a huge industry, and how it is that the hardworking farmers can make more money through a fair trade cooperative than if they were on their own, because they have the backing of the organization. And there was one particular lesson that really was impactful for the students. It was about the unequal distribution of wealth across the world. So we used desks and percentages of students to match the percentages of money. And when it came down to the poorest people of the world, it was like 15 students trying to crowd into one desk, because that was the proportional amount of the money for the poorest people of the world.
By acting that out in that way, I can see it would make an impact way different than a statistic on a piece of paper in front of them. And do you have parent involvement in this too?
We have parent involvement as part of our committee and part of our when we have bake sales and they have to do the coffee and things at bake sales, it's fair trade coffee. So parents are involved that way. Also as the room parents and parents of the fifth graders for those funds raised for camp. And of course, there are, many of them come to our fair trade gift fair in October.
That's a great involvement of the parents. So then it isn't only the children that are learning, but it's getting carried into the homes of people. And now how many is the curriculum that we're talking about? Does it start in fifth grade or is it in other grades too?
Well, it starts in fifth grade. I adapted some of the curriculum to third grade when I taught third grade, but fair trade itself made lessons that were tied mostly to junior high. So our junior high teachers used them several years ago and, you know, helped to adapt them. And then the fifth grade teacher uses them. And then I, as a third grade teacher, adapted them down a little bit to our third graders so they could understand them.
So it seems to me that by having it in the curriculum like this and then having a calendar of events, that you've really kind of made it part of, what happens here in this academy, and that it can therefore have good sustaining interest, I would think. How many years ago did you start this?
It's about six.
Okay, and so I imagine it was incremental as you continue to do this, and did you? I don't know if you met with resistance.
I don't think we met with resistance, but it did take a lot of work on Anne's part and her group's part and the committee to get the people to understand what we were doing. Last year, we actually had a fair trade event down on the field, fair trade. We participated in our human chain here at St. Martin of Tours Academy, and we walked around the field all linked together, and we had the pillars of fair trade out on the field, and everyone, you know, saw what the pillars were. Ben and Jerry's came with their fair trade ice cream for a little treat at the end, which was fun for the kids.
So this was at I don't know, was there an athletic event or what? No, what was kind of an event was this?
It was actually for World Fair Trade Day.
World Fair Trade in May. Yes, in May. Okay. Well, let's see. So I have a couple of questions more. Maybe, Anne, for you, this one. If you were talking to another school and say maybe there was one teacher or a couple of students that had an interest, how would you recommend they proceed, since you seem to be the spark plug here? How would you help them ignite that particular school?
I think, well, I have a lot of information that I share, so we make it easy, so it's easy on paper to share with the staff and students. Also, there's a lot of films that we can share. And like one of them is called The True Cost. And it really, you learn where your clothes are made and the cost of your garments. And also the slavery that's involved in making the clothing. So, you know, I recommend that people see, you know, some of these films. Some age-appropriate ones are really about bananas. You know, when you think about it, they're grown in a developing country, and the labor is intensive. And people work where there's a lot of pesticides in these fields. So we try to educate people to just change that, number one, on their campus. If you have fair trade bananas or like hot chocolate, that you can make a change and just start with that. People don't think about, specifically with the bananas, that they, because the, I have to think what I'm, edit that. I have to think what I'm trying, what I want to say is, the peels, even though you can peel the bananas back so they think that they don't get the pesticides in them, the people, we have to think of the people that are working in the fields that are affected by the pesticides.
Okay, so why don't you start off like, so when we peel a banana.
So when we peel a banana, we understand that that we are actually peeling back the pesticide that's on it. So it won't hurt us because we're eating the fruit inside. But what we have to think about is the people that worked in the fields, that they're exposed to this pesticide. So the best thing you can do is buy your organic banana. And if it's fair trade, you know that these people were paid a fair wage for this hard, labor-intensive fruit that we all eat every day.
Yes, yeah, so these are the ways through these films and through the information on paper. This is how you would help a school organize for bringing fair trade into really the many facets that Diane, that you have mentioned. And what would you say to the principal of that school?
That if they were to be interested in becoming a fair trade school, it would be a wonderful event for themselves. The kids will get into it, and they will understand it, and they will like it. For instance, at our school, we try to provide new playground equipment every year. So we are committed to buying fair trade soccer balls. So when I went into each of the classes to deliver their special fair trade soccer ball, I asked him the question, why do you think we are willing to pay more money for this soccer ball? And they all knew it was because the people were paid a fair wage and that no children were involved in making of it. So I said, why is it important that children are not involved in making of this soccer ball for you? And they said, because they should be in school.
Oh my goodness. I'm just excited listening to the two of you. And I'm also thinking about the Maya Vanik Coffee Cooperative that Jubilee has been a part of over the years. Maya Vanik in the state of Chiapas, and so many farmers were so excited to learn about fair trade and organic growing, even though it meant a lot of extra work and learning on their part. They knew they were going to start getting a fair price, and the year before they had just burned half their crop in a kind of a ritual sacrifice, saying we can't sell this coffee for more than it cost us to grow it. We might as well offer it to God. as a sacrifice of the suffering that the market is bringing to us. And so then from there to launch into fair trade and organic growing is quite a transformation. Well, you've done a great job, I think, of really, like, if a principal were to listen to this, or a teacher, parent who is concerned about fundraisers and they don't particularly want to sell junk food anymore at their fundraisers, which is so important. It just seems scandalous to me that kids are going around raising money by promoting this junk food when there's this wonderful alternative. So I think we've really been helpful. And this list of films that you talk about, I'm not sure how to make that available to people, but you can certainly get in contact with Anne for that, or maybe we can put it on our website. We'll talk more about that. Now, right next door to St. Martin of Tours Academy is the congregation, the sanctuary. So this is also, of course, a good-sized parish. And as I understand it, it's a fair trade congregation. I'm guessing that you, Anne, had a lot to do with that. So tell us how that started, how long ago, and how you went about it.
Well, we learned with fair trade that it's not about charity. It's really about lifting the person, the dignity of the person, and to give them a sense of self-worth. So what better way than bringing it to your congregation when you can educate people to purchase better? And so we brought the education in. We wanted to incorporate products like the coffee. That's the first thing you can change in your congregation. There's several brands of fair trade coffee out there. Even Costco has the Kirkland brand. The price is comparable to other coffee brands. And it's good. And Archer Farms at Target, there's just several brands you can pick from. So when you educate your congregation about buying better and the reason why you've made these decisions, you can offer the coffee and the teas and other things, even sugar, at your coffee socials, whatever you have. But that's part of the criteria. Another one is...
Well, that's part of the criteria to become a fair trade congregation, right? So that you need to offer products. And since coffee hour is almost like another sacrament in lots of churches. By the way, that brings up something. I think communion wine can also be fair trade. Is that true?
Yes, there is more fair trade wine, and that's true. But most importantly, though, what some of the criteria is to bring fair trade education, but it's the social teachings of your congregation. So you bring it in. So most congregations, they care for the poor, they care for the environment, and that's part of the things that fair trade brings in. So you want to incorporate it in there. And for instance, Catholic Relief Services Ethical Trade was developed, this program, so that we can offer different things through CRS. And they've even developed Serve. It's a catalog that offers a chance for artisans to have their items in the catalog. But anyway, if you can incorporate your social teachings into your congregation, that's part of it. And then also to have events. So whatever events you have, you offer, you serve fair trade coffee.
And so how many criteria does a congregation, I mean, are there a sort of, like, you have to do 5 of 10 or something? Or how do you know you've been... Mm-hmm. Oh, we're a certified fair trade congregation. Is there a step like that?
Well, there's only 3 things. It's really to incorporate the social teachings of into your congregation, you know, to switch out event products like coffee, and to have events. But the way to get the credit for it is through fair trade campaigns, and it's fairtradecampaigns.org that you would go on and say, I'd like to register. And there's hundreds of churches in the United States that have registered, and several here in San Diego that are Episcopal, Unitarian, Lutheran, and, of course, the Catholic churches. We have several Catholic churches that are fair trade congregations now.
Again, are there certain obstacles that you've had to overcome in these efforts, or has it just been mostly once they are educated, people say, yes, of course?
I think once people understand, especially your pastor, understand it, they will do it. It's just getting the information to them. And unless people get free coffee, why wouldn't they change? And I know one church that gets free coffee and they don't want to change.
All right. So I think this conversation is showing clearly to people that there are some real things that can be done in when trade isn't just for presidents of countries and economic advisors and legislative bodies. Trade is also in the choices that we make. What would you say to someone who says, "Well, fair trade, but that's just another group that's pushing consumption"? I don't know, maybe if you've ever heard that, you have, and you've never heard that. Okay, well then you haven't been challenged to make. You know, I mean, because when I think about what the two of you have been saying, Diane and Anne, you know, you're not talking about increasing consumption. You're saying these are things that in some ways we would be buying anyway, and what we're doing is learning that there's a fair trade option. So that's what it sounds like to me. That is what's going on here. Any thoughts you want to add to that, either of you?
Yes. I was going to say one of the first things I heard when we first started talking about fair trade, and it was a while ago and I can't remember the words exactly, but the line was something like, every monetary decision has ethical consequences to it.
Yes, and that's that. I mean, that's something that's good. I'm glad you said it. It's something we slip by a lot, where you don't necessarily think that every monetary decision, but that seems really right to me. At one point, Anne, you said something about, and in a moment I'll let you each say anything else that you feel we're sort of leaving out, but I know that you had said something about slavery. So chocolate, I know, is a big thing, and I don't know, what does it mean that that when we can go shopping without having slavery in it? I think I saw that in one of the flyers. How to do your shopping, get the slavery out of your shopping. So what's that about?
Well, specifically with chocolate, there's a lot of child slavery in the Ivory Coast with the harvesting of the cacao pods. So we want people to look for the labels, especially with chocolate, because the abuse is incredible. There is a film that's called The Dark Side of Chocolate that you can watch, and it's on YouTube. And it's just heartbreaking that the people are treated so poorly in these countries for our chocolate. And there's another film that was telling for me, and it was created by the Diocese of Orlando. And I show it to our junior high group, but it really shows about the young people in the countries being taken away from their homes and then working in these plantations to harvest the cacao pods. And they even show a child for the first time trying a piece of chocolate, and he can't believe what he's tasting, a real piece of chocolate. So we have to be aware of where our products come from through our supply chains and make sure that people are protected and not working in these pesticides, and especially our children. And like I said, the worst one is the chocolate.
All right. And I think you've given us both so much. You know, I mean, there might be, for example, a congregation that, they serve fair trade coffee, but that's about as far as they've gotten. And it seems to me that in the way you've talked about this school and about this parish, the congregational life, you are really talking about getting it far more integrated into the patterns and into the thoughts and into the educational ministries of this school and of this parish, and that seems really, really important to me. So I think we've probably come to about the end of our of our time. I'm having so much fun. I wanted to keep going. You know, maybe we can get a delegation of people to go down to Chiapas and visit some of the fair trade places, and we could collaborate together on that. Do you think that could possibly work? That Jubilee Economics Ministries and some group that, whether it's school, congregation, or something, we could possibly collaborate on a trip to see fair trade growers and artisans and all. Well, think about it. Any final word that either of you want to give as a kind of wrap-up? Okay, Anne?
Well, I have to say, like you said, the education is huge. And because of the students we've started five years ago that have graduated from St. Martin's, they have gone on to the high schools. And one girl in particular started a club over at Our Lady of Peace. And now they are a fair trade high school. And they were actually one of the, I think it's the first Catholic high school in the area. And we have one girl that's going to be graduating that is going to go to Modern Day, and she's wants to start a fair trade club there. But we've seen now where everything has spread. We want fair trade to be normal. We want people to just buy things and to understand the labels. And what we didn't talk too much was the different kinds of labels out there. But when you go look at your products, just read the different labels that are on the packages.
We'll return momentarily to Lee's conversation about fair trade in schools movement. Today, immediately following part two of this interview, the Common Good feature will be homestay clubs. Now let's return to Lee's conversation. In the second part, Anne Diane Hartley has returned to her duties as principal at St. Martin of Tours Academy, but Anne Pacheco has a few more important things to add on fair trade in schools and congregations.
And you also have some information on just how many schools and communities are doing fair trade. I don't think we even have talked about your extensive work in making La Mesa a fair trade town, for example. So you have some information on that. Just what do you know about how many of those schools, how many of these communities and schools do you know about around the country or locally, however you want to say it?
Well, right now there's 700 active universities in the United States. There's 511 fair trade towns, 294 schools, and 268 congregations. This tells us how much fair trade is spreading. It's very rewarding to see, especially the universities, thrive in becoming fair trade universities. I think the last one was Austin University, and there's Houston University as a fair trade university. But here locally, we have Point Loma Nazarene, we have USD, and we have UCSD. And our hope is one of these days to have San Diego State be a fair trade university.
Uh-huh. Well, may that happen too. And then too, there are certain companies that are especially conscious around making products that are fair trade. And I think it would be helpful for listeners to have you name some of them.
Well, one of the ones that we use to buy our fair trade t-shirts at is Hey Now. It's based in Berkeley, but their cotton is organic and they use organic dyes. And the quality of the shirt is, you can't even compare it to other shirts. It's wonderful, and we highly recommend if you're going to switch shirts, instead of getting that $5 shirt, it's less than $10. Get that shirt and make a difference for the environment. Also, I want to mention Dr. Bronner's, who does an excellent job with their fair trade products. Everything is pure. This is the only soap that you can use in the national parks, but they've always come to our gift fair to give out samples. You'll never see them advertised on the TV. They're just simply word of mouth and the community efforts that they do. Another company is Equal Exchange. That's where we purchase our coffee, chocolate, and tea, and where we get our fundraiser from. This is a company that was started in 1986, and it's worker-owned. And they, all through the supply chain, is of course transparent, but it's a company that we really, really want to do business with. Another one, just briefly, Ascend Athletics, and that is where we get the soccer balls. So you know that everything, every part of that company, they're paying a living wage to these people. They're working in healthy working conditions. And this is a company in Pakistan. The company has their headquarters here in California, but their plant is in Pakistan, and they're doing everything right. You can watch a YouTube video seeing the workers getting their first living wage paycheck, and it's just that's where you want to buy your soccer balls with the company that's making work.
Say the name of that company one more time.
Senda Athletics.
Spell it.
It's S-E-N-D-A Athletics.
Okay. And then also, I think there's a couple, just looking at your lap here, there's a couple of catalogs that are excellent instruments for anyone who's seeking to do a fundraiser using fair trade products. So tell us about that.
Well, just briefly with Equal Exchange, they have a component, if you're faith-based, where you can earn money. 40% of whatever you sell goes back to your whatever you want to earn money for. They're great. And then Catholic Relief Services has their ethical trade catalog book with many artisan products, home products. And then also that component is with Serve. And now for the first time this year, you can set up a website with your like your school, and the parents can go on it and just order the items, and it's a 20% profit. So if you use both these catalogs, you're getting a 60% profit for things that people will want to have. They're just beautiful items, and the chocolate and coffee and tea are excellent. And also there's another company we've tried, which is Malia Designs, and it's women's accessories. They make bags and wallets and things out of recycled cement bags and feed bags, and they're all about employing women that have been trafficked. So our students, they came in, actually Malia Designs came into our school, and the students were able to pick out the items that they liked the best, and they created a catalog for it, and we used that as a fundraiser about 2 years ago, and it was very successful. The parents were surprised to see these really cool bags that are recycled, and they liked it. So we're happy to offer this to them.
Is this a local company? I think you mentioned Cambodia in an off mic conversation.
The company buys their or has the women that work for the company is from Cambodia. The company is nationwide, and they have a representative here locally in San Diego.
Okay. Wonderful information. I'm glad that you're sharing all this. And then I have one more question I'd like to ask you. And that is, somewhere along the line in your life, this grabbed a hold of you. And I'd like to know how that happened, if you're willing to share that, and how this really is a divine call for you to do this, is what I perceive.
It is a calling, I must say, after all these years. But when we learned that charity really isn't the answer, that really uplifting people by buying their products from these developing countries, from the farmers and the artisans, that we really do lift them out of poverty and give them a living wage, this is the answer on how we can help people. Charity is good, but it's not solving the problem. And that was a light bulb for me, and also for Nancy Ryan, when we teamed up together to decide to try to get La Mesa to be a fair trade town, which we succeeded to do. But this was the answer. It's not charity. It's really lifting people up out of poverty, and these people are mostly women and children.
Very good. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I think, as I said, when I came to the event here in October, it was very educational for me, even though I've been knowing about this for a long time. And new developments keep happening in the world of fair trade and in the structures and products and educational options for fair trade. And so this has been a great conversation, and I think I look forward to sharing it with some other schools and parishes that I know of, and we'll just keep the fair trade movement going, and I think we've made a contribution to it here. So thank you so much, Anne and Diane, for this time shared.
You've been listening to the second half of Lee's conversation about the Fair Trade in Schools movement. And so it's time for the Common Good feature, homestay clubs. My spouse Rita and I became believers in homestay clubs before we retired, actually. There are three of them that we've been members. And the first one is called Affordable Travel Club. The second one is called Evergreen Travel Club. Those are both for seniors, 55 and older. And the third one is called Mennonite Your Way. That one is for people of all ages. Now, Mennonite Your Way, of course, coming out of the Mennonite Anabaptist tradition, is primarily for Christians, where the other two accommodates people of all faiths. The concept behind Homestay Club is that you invite someone to come and stay in your home for a night or two. Usually involves, you know, of course, a bed and breakfast. And usually there's a small gratuity of maybe $20. Now, this isn't complicated. By becoming a member of any one or all three of these homestay clubs, you just pay an annual dues, and then you gain access to a directory. In the case of Affordable and Evergreen, that directory is online. With Mennonite Your Way, it's primarily a paper directory. And so you just contact the host directly and make arrangements. And it's been a wonderful experience. We've met some delightful people, and we've had some delightful people in our homes as well. So we recommend homestay clubs, Affordable Travel, Evergreen, and Mennonite Your Way as ways of living in the Jubilee economy. In future episodes, you'll hear things such as, we have other places to put our retirement funds other than Wall Street. And also, why does Iowa need a moratorium on big ag confinements for hogs and chickens? Have you been listening to our recent episodes? In October, we heard from Derek and Nancy Cassidy about the important climate summit in California. In November, we heard from two women leaders of the Jubilee Circles in Mexico, their projects and the changes they're bringing to their communities. On the mid-month episodes this fall, we've been bringing you a mini-series on having a less consumer Christmas called Whose Birthday? It's based on an annual publication for individuals, families, and congregations called Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? It gently moves us away from overconsumption, especially at Christmas time when consumerism runs rampant. This is particularly important in a multi-faith culture. Do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Also, please subscribe to my Simple Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, our podcasts, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as Non-Conform Freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage, and holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Simpler Living One Earth and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Time to wrap up this episode. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we need you to know about the podcast. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics One Earth and Simple Living Works blogs. If you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we publish something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to the podcasts at iTunes and your favorite podcast services. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works and co-host Lee Vanham of Jubilee One Earth Economics. And I'm wishing you well as we strive to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.